nice being here, isn't it?
Yeah. So Galway is a place that we have, I guess, found ourselves in a lot over the past couple of years, and there's kind of nowhere else that is like here on the weekends. It's always a hive of activity, of music, of people, of food. It has a sprawling market.
It also is impossible to get a parking space in.
Yes, the traffic is particularly bad.
I'm not selling it very well.
No, but it's an amazing place.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing over there?
No.
A leprechaun photo booth.
I've seen and heard it all now.
Yeah. Interesting. So we are on, what's the name of this street? I was going to say O'Connell Street, but that's not right.
Shop Street. Which goes onto Quay Street and then goes towards the Spanish Arch. And then on the other side goes up towards Air Square.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of the highway of all things Galway.
And we're outside McCambridge's, a emporium of food and drink, and probably one of the best curations and selections of Irish food and drink in this part of the world, I guess, isn't it?
It has everything from amazing spirits producers to fresh bread to cheese and meats to all kinds of spices and spreads. It is a true emporium of all things Irish and all things Irish produce.
And apparently, according to Jess Murphy from Kai here in Galway, the ham is to die for. Why did I say apparently?
Apparently, you bought it on her recommendation and
it was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm saying apparently. Yeah. What a numpty. We sound like we're the experts on Galway. We're not. We really are not. So we need an expert. Where is our expert? Sheena. So our guest on Sheena Fat this week is Sheena Dignam, who runs the Galway Food Tours, which we booked on, God, was it 3 years ago now?
It seems like it, yeah, on a complete whim.
It was a couple of days after Christmas.
Minute.
Yeah. It was a couple of days after Christmas, and it was like, oh, I have a minimum of 2 people per tour. And we were like, hello, we are the minimum of 2 people per tour. And we had an absolutely fabulous little day going around Galway just in the Twixmas period.
It was amazing. And then that was the trip that we ate in Cava, right?
Yes, that sounds right.
And her tour took us into Hazel Mountain Cafe. Took us into Teignmouthin.
Yes.
Where else? I'm trying to think back.
Cupontae,
yeah. Oh.
So we're going to find out more about Galway, and more about Sheena in particular, because she is fascinating, in our opinion, and she is such a trooper when it comes to championing food from this region, and championing this city and beyond. As is often the case whenever we visit Galway, the heavens decide to open and it begins to rain. So we rearranged to meet Sheena at Casbah, a beautiful wine bar just above Teignmouthin. Now, we are in a wine bar, so we do need something in our hand, and Sheena insists on some bubbles. And I think that this might be the first bubble-based podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
That's great.
No pressure there.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I love that because we've had other ones, like where it's just been tea and gin.
Okay, there has been alcohol, so there I'm not okay. I'm not an alcoholic.
It is us.
Actually, in the first few episodes, it was a constant theme, so yeah. It was like, yeah. So I think it could be a new chapter now.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice, okay.
The pressure on other people now, actually, when you think about it.
They need to actually come maybe with a bottle of, I don't know, Côte de Rhône from 2007 or something like that.
So any future interviewees, take note.
Right now. Applies for alcohol and we're all yours. We used to say if you left a review on iTunes, it's a ticket into being on the podcast, but no, not quite.
No.
This is the new way.
Although it still helps.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's a Saturday afternoon as we're recording this. Of course, podcasts are non-time specific, yes. So it could be any day, but right now we are sitting here in Galway in Casbah. Which you were in
yes.
before. I have never been here.
I ate in here about a year ago.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was only open, I think, a few weeks, a few months, and it was really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. It's an impressive space.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful for you for squeezing us in today, because Saturday, I'm sure, is tour day, busy day.
Yes. No, but it's great. Like, thanks for having me. Tour day now, I'm blessed and happy to say, is nearly every day, so it's fantastic, you know. I now have my colleague Gosha, she works with me, so, we're able, and we just hired another part-time guide, so, you know, we're kind of organically developing, you know, and it's not just me, which is great. You know, you can do so much more and focus on, you know, I suppose maybe other themed events that you want to do throughout the year instead of just running from a food tour to the next, you know, that kind of way. So just taking perspective, I suppose, in the business, so, yeah.
How did it all begin?
It began when I was born in Wicklow. No, I won't go back that far.
Very far. Then I'm in Galway.
Yeah, so like I moved to Galway. I used to run a chocolate shop in Dublin. And when I was running the chocolate shop, Fabulous Food Trails, who you probably do know, Evelyn, amazing woman, she used to come in with the food tours into the chocolate shop, you know, and I just thought it was a great kind of platform for me, as we were a new business, to actually show people what we were doing and where the chocolate was made and what it's about and what it tastes like. And then for them, it's probably, maybe they didn't even know about it or they wouldn't have been aware about it. And, you know, so it worked both ways. And then, so I just thought it was a really class idea. And then I had enough of Dublin. I mean, I just think I started feeling I was a bit too old for it. I don't know. But I just wanted to actually experience something else. And I was thinking either I'll go back to France, or if not, I'll go to Galway. And I was with a French man at the time who didn't want to live in France, so we went for Galway. And I just felt this connection that I can't even really describe to you why I really like Galway, but I just thought it was such an amazing place for, you know, the food producers being so close to the chefs and the restaurant scene, and also the cultural scene, you know, the arts and everything. Just has something that's special and unique for me anyway. So then, I wanted to originally start my food tours in French because I grew up in France and I would get loads of slagging from the French saying that you have nothing to eat here, you know, it's fish and chips and it's all very heavy. And I said, no, let me show you what we're doing, lads. So I started the food tours in French, and then it kind of grew to the American market, and, you know, so I still run them in French, but that's, you know, just a percentage of what the tours, the majority is in English. Yeah. And then, I suppose, you know, just after a while, you know, it's just developing building your relationship with the producers, the suppliers. You know, we have over 50 in Galway, which is fantastic, you know, and, you know, I love surprising people with the new Ireland and the new culinary scene, you know, because a lot of people wouldn't be aware and still do think of the stews, the Guinness, the brown bread. So it's nice to show them, oh, no, we're making air-dried lamb, or we're, you know, beer collectives, we're roasting our own beans in Galway, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, which is really great. So, yes, that's how it kind of all started and grew 4 years later. Yeah.
Amazing. And who is your customer? Painfully obvious question. Is it heavy on internationals, or is it across the spectrum?
Yeah, it's kind of like, I love having, like today we had local people that were on the tour. We had Americans, we had, Americans, we had Scottish. It's a happy mix of different people, but I must say the majority would be Americans. And we run evening tours, and they would be all Irish or local, you know, people, which is fantastic, you know, because I think the daytime tours, you know, it's more, the tourist office would recommend us and stuff like that. As the evening ones, you'd have to be in the city to know when it's happening, you know, that kind of way, because we only run them every once a month kind of thing. Yeah, so.
And I guess Ireland is completely opening up to Asia. There's tons of extra flights and extra routes. So is there an increase in Asian interest?
Not at the moment. I haven't seen it just yet, but it is going to be a very busy year. Like I can just see it on the books already. There's a lot of bookings coming through, which is great. I haven't seen any Asian bookings as of yet, but like it's good to go to those kind of trade shows like Mehel, you know, so, you know, you get to make those connections and meet those tour operators, or they're looking for something new to do. So we'll see what the future will hold.
It is a constant hustle, isn't it? Trying to keep it going. But you've such a a number of accolades standing to you, thankfully, and we've always been like, whenever we see that you win. And, you know, word of mouth as well gets around, you know, it is the best tour. We loved it. We still have great memories. We still recommend people to come on your tour because it is fantastic.
So explain our experience of the tour 3 years ago?
Well, we're going to say 2 years ago, so we all feel...
all still effortlessly young.
So, what was it? It was just after Christmas.
It was the 29th or the 30th or something.
Yeah.
It was when we used to do, because we lived in London, we used to come home for Christmas and we'd be like, yay, 10 days at home.
After five. After five, it's
I need
like,
to get away.
Yeah.
I'll see you in the new year. So we used to go away and we used to go to different parts of Ireland. And then this one Christmas, Twixmas, we went to go away. And it was all kind of organized really super quick. And I think we booked the tour with you the day before.
Yeah.
And complete chances.
Yeah, completely. Like, and you were like, yeah, minimum two people. Yeah, that's fine. And then, hiya. It was just us.
Yeah, which was lovely. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, you guys have done so much for me and my business to promote it. I don't know if I should say that, but, you know, you guys, like, were Twittering, Instagramming, and constantly as well. And the videos that you did was really nice. Go away, like, was it 48 hours?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was really, really great. You know, more people like yourselves, so, you know, the world would be a better place, I think, really.
Wow. There's the sound bite right there.
Haven't
thank you.
We haven't started the bubbles yet, you know? Like, wait, there's going to be cheers now.
Right on cue.
Right on cue.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Cheers
to that. Sláinte. And that is the end of this episode. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
It all goes downhill from there.
There's nothing like bubbles on a Saturday.
No,
absolutely not. Absolutely.
So, if we're speaking about Galway,
and
its food, how has it evolved over the past few years?
I suppose, like, you know, if you fast forward to, you know, actually where we are now in the Casbah, the reason, I don't know if you know why it's called the Casbah. Mm-hmm. So in the 1970s, there was only one restaurant on the street, right? And it was called the Casbah. So it was owned by two women who never married. Biddy was definitely one of the names. I can't remember the other name. But there's only two items on their menu that they served, okay? So they had a big pot of grabeens. And it was, if you wanted to splash out and spend a bit more, you went to the bottom of the pot and you got all the extra little bits.
Yeah.
And if you wanted the top, it was just the broth, right? So...
I would still order that right now.
I know. But it's, you know, one of the sisters was like the curse of the drink, you know, I hate it. And then the other sister had the naggin up her sleeve, right?
That was us.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a few swigs during the day. And then, you know, it was a place that people would go to have, like, listen to music and, you know, there'd be singing and stuff like that. So it was kind of like, it was a little institution back then. So that was in the 70s, right? So, and there's only one restaurant on this busy thoroughfare now, you know, so you can imagine. And I definitely think, you know, I think there's a lot of support with locals, in terms of the producers. They really, you know, make an effort and point shopping local. And, you know, the fact that we still have a sixth generation family run bakery, you know, that's there since 1876 and is still as busy as, you know, with locals coming in from Connemara, you know, to go get their bread and stuff like that, you know, and going onto the market and getting their oysters with Michael. So, you know, you have the support from the local community, and I suppose that transpires to the producers kind of like experimenting with new things. And then the restaurant scene, you know, it's just like you're right in the middle of like the gateway between Connemara, the Burn, so it is very busy anyway, but it's also got a sense of place, a soul, you know, I think, you know, and the fact that the producers are so close with the restaurants, I mean, you can really see that, you know, it's no wonder we have two restaurants that are Michelin star now. We've got four Bib Gourmand, I think, or finally, yeah. And, you know, award-winning restaurants all over and new kind of collaborations and stuff like that, you know. So it's all a buzz. So it has, like, really kind of changed to, like, 10 years ago when, you know, I'm going to say 10 years ago, like, there was Cava that was still there, you know, there was Ardbia, you know, excuse me, I'd like, I hope nobody's going to get offended, but in my mind, just thinking like, now that was pretty much it. And now, you know, you've got, you know, so many places to go to, you know, pick, you know, you got like a place that just does oysters and ceviche, you know, you got places that are just doing vegetarian, vegan, you know, it's just great, you know, it's for me in my day-to-day job makes it so much easier, you know, because I've got so much to show people. Yeah.
It wasn't always your day-to-day job.
No.
No. If I remember right, when we met back to 3 years ago, you were also working in restaurants at the time. Is that still the case? No?
No. Well, I still am on the books in Kai. Whenever they need me, I'll go in there and work because I just love it. You get to taste, I'm sure she always makes these crazy new things and she's working with, you know, these new producers that I never heard of, you know, so it's really like a great platform to see these people and taste it. Because then afterwards you get to sit down at the end of the night and just have a nice glass of wine, have some of the amazing food, you know, what more could you want, you know? So, so I still throw my toe in every now and then, but not, now this is my full-time job.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And other people's jobs too, which is amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. I guess as a tour guide, everybody thinks that it's fun and you're out on the streets and I'm sure there's tons more organization and stress and pressure as an entrepreneur that everyone has no idea about.
Yeah, so true. So true. Yeah, it is you know, you've got the whole accountancy part of things, which I love. Not like sweet mother.
Tax, VAT,
you know, all these things. So, and invoicing and, you know, forgetting to invoice people for 2 months. Like, damn it, they never paid me.
You and know, then they like, forget to pay you, which is such a...
Yeah, which is lovely, you know?
It's so rare, though. I know. So rare. Only every few people.
Every freelancer right now is just digging their nails into a table going, yes, I know.
Collective angst at this time.
Thank God we got the bubbles right. Yeah. Beautiful. It is on that side, there's that. And then there's also, you know, you have to find yourself, you don't want to turn away business, but you want to stay true to your values. And that's something that's really, that I've been toying with maybe last year and the year before, because, you know, you can't accept a group of 25, you know, I mean, it's not possible. The places that you bring them to, you were on the tour, you know, they're really small. That's why people like them. You know, they're not these huge premises that can just cater for mass people. So, and then if you try and do it, you know, or try and go to venues that you're not really fully sure that it works with your what you want to showcase people, it'll only backfire, you know. So now I'm just saying, you know, it still might just break my heart that I can't accept a group of 50, but I prefer to say no rather than, you know, just to bring them to places that I don't believe is what I'd like to show on my tours. And then I suppose what else would be... Yeah, just, you know, you're constantly on call. Your phone is, you know it. You're always there looking at your emails, checking, you know, and stuff like that. So, and you also have to promote yourself, which I hate Instagram and I hate Twitter. And, you know, I probably shouldn't say that, but I really don't think it's vital for my business, but I don't enjoy doing it. It's a chore. I just have to sit down. What am I going to say now? You know, and I spend ages doing it. Some people find, like, Jess and Kai, she's just a natural on it. Like, she's just, like, she's actually got a pan in one hand and, like, she's actually Instagramming at the same time. You know what I mean? She's just...
It's crazy.
The meme queen as well on Twitter.
Oh, my God. Yeah, everything. And she gets the best memes. I don't know where she finds them, but she's...
It's a mystery to us, too, yeah. It's like, how did you find that one?
Yeah. She's great. She's... and she really understands... I mean, because I think it's also, you know, people can put on generic kind of like pictures or videos and stuff like that, but it's not really showcasing the true side of the business. People want to see like maybe a little bit of, you know, maybe people getting their hands dirty, you know, rather than just a polished photo with a bottle of wine and a cork on the side, that kind of way. So. Yeah.
And I suppose in the world, especially Instagram more so than Twitter, it is so polished and it's so themed and curated and... You know, we've always been, two people have always said that Instagram is a curation of a life. It's a snapshot. It's not real. And I think when you, as you say, when people are able to show the nitty gritty of it, isn't it so much more exciting?
Yeah. Exactly.
And it's also abused a lot as well and exploited. So I think, it has its uses, but it's also a nightmare as well. On that point of... you said about explaining Irish cuisine to everyone in France. Mm. Can you offer us an overview of how you explain Irish to an international audience?
Okay, so this is my interpretation of things. It's not necessarily maybe, you know, founded on exact facts, but this is how I see it, okay? So, you know, Ireland, a little island, we weren't traveling. You know, Aer Lingus was the only air company in and out of the country, and it was very expensive, you know? People weren't necessarily traveling like, you know, my parents, you know, or my grandparents, forget it, you know? So I think, you know, Loverload, Ryanair came on board and really just opened the doors for us to actually learn from different cultures and actually see what they were doing and realize that we didn't need to import all that meat or that cheese as we are making. Now we know how to make, we have the terroir, we have the amazing products that we're starting to make now. So I explain it like a kind of a locomotive train, you know, where it's kind of like taken a while to kind of get up and running, but now we're kind of full steam ahead, which is super exciting. And, you know, it's a great time to be in Ireland, yeah. In this industry.
Yeah. I like the caveat of in this industry. No, it's true. We are blessed with Irish food at the moment, and the amount of producers. Like, we actually have a menu in front of us, and I'm like, yes, 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 because it is. There's so many names. You have your Killery Mussels here, Flaggy Shore Oysters. The West, though.
Yeah.
This whole area, the West, it's just.
Yeah.
It's rich.
Yeah, it's rich and heritage of food and just the beauty of some of the producers and some of the products that come out of here. And a lot of them are seafood based. And Irish people and fish,
it's you know, often a really hard sell.
Well, out here, is especially coming from Dublin and Drogheda and the East, eating seafood is probably a bit more common around here. And as you see so many different Irish people from all around the country, how do you find the reaction about seafood? Like oysters, you know, around here in particular are fabulous.
Absolutely. And actually, a little tidbit of information that one of the gentlemen who's restoring the Galway hooker boats to go out for sale, he actually told me, and I couldn't believe it, pre-famine, an average person was eating 2,000 native oysters a week. And as you just mentioned... Every person. That's why we actually overate, and we actually, that's why the native oysters are only available for a certain amount of time of the year now, because, you know, we just like kind of went through them so quickly and so fast. 2,000 a day, I'm sure, like it was an insane. A week.
Which at these prices is about €4,416. I just
cut.
Yeah,
a week.
Do
you
want to do my account? Do you want them to be wrong? But no.
I would happily eat 2,000 oysters a week.
Yeah, me too. I would live off them, no problem. Yes, they're the best, and we have the best here. It's you know, it's great to see, and like, you know, it's also, you know, when you meet the likes of like Jerry from the Flaggy Shore Oysters that are on the menu there. I mean, he's such a character, and he, you know, he goes into, you know, his passion of being in the business since the 70s. His daughter has actually taken it on now, and kind of like, you know, they started to export their oysters to Dubai, you know, because they're like, you know, it's all these stories, and I think we're diverting from what I was saying, but yeah, just people connect with stories, and you know, that you can tell if it's genuine or not, you know, in post. Scripted. I forgot what we were talking about.
Oysters. We just got obsessed with oysters.
Just like, oh, oysters. And then trailing off. But I think that's a really key, integral idea. And it's the fuel underneath everything is that on a tour, it's the stories. It's the information. It's the connection to a plate or a dish or a drink. That is how everything is changing. Everyone is able to try anything, but hearing stories is so, so important.
Absolutely. Like, I've done some amazing food tours. Like, that's what I do for research and just because I love them. Yeah. But there's a few food tours that I've been on. The food was amazing, but I didn't rate the food tour as being good because I couldn't connect with the places that we went to. It's somebody just giving you something and walking away. So what's the story behind there? Why are we eating this, and why are we eating it here? Or, you know, and as you said, people really you know, make the connection once they have the story and then taste or the food or the drink, you know?
And Irish are storytellers at the end of the day and love to be able to tell where they came from, what they, you know, how they got into the business of what they do. And especially, there's a whole new generation of food producers in particular coming out from the recession in particular. And so there's a really, you know, going back to the kind of 10 years back in Galway times, there's a whole new generation of food producers who have gone away to Australia, America, or wherever, and bringing ideas back. And then a whole new generation of people who weren't born in Ireland who are bringing their stories here. And we every time we're here, we're seeing like so many new cultural changes with Galway, and reflects in the food too, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's some like the likes of Jess and Vaughn and Ardbia. I mean, working with the refugee chefs, you know, that are coming over, you know, that are, you know, they used to be chefs and can't, you know, work, and doing events with them and what they're showcasing and their culture of food is just absolutely fascinating. And it's, and you know, I think what's good with Irish people in a general sense, we'll always try something once, like, and if we don't like it, well, we don't like it, but we'll always give it a shot. We'll never say no or turn up our nose.
You gave us sushi downstairs here.
Yes. Good memory. Very good. Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, where am I? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you, yes.
An Irish twist on the sushi as well.
Yeah. So that's from Wa, just down the road. And actually, Yoshimi, so I just love her determination. So she decided to move to Ireland in 2001, started trying to sell sushi on the markets, and of course nobody was buying it. Like, you know, feck off there with your, you know, seaweed and your raw fish. It's not going to work.
Notions.
There's no spuds.
Absolutely. Like, you know, and that connection of her actually trying to get people to... So she knew that everybody loved turnip and we had it all the time, well, especially on a Sunday. So making turnip sushi, you know, was her key way, her window into actually getting people to try sushi, you know?
Yeah. And it was incredible.
Yeah, you enjoyed it. Great. Yeah, because it is quite surprising, you know? I mean, it's a little bit sweet. I don't necessarily think you'd associate maybe turnip with sushi. Yeah. But now, yeah, she has her own restaurant. Last year, she won Best 100 Restaurants in Ireland, you know. So, and she's opening her new, what is it when they cook right in front of you?
Teppanyaki?
Yes. So, thank you. So she's actually launching that, I think, this week or next week.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds
right. Yeah. So, yeah, and so I got to taste some of her menu that she's going to be supplying, and absolutely class. She's going to be amazing at it, you know, because there is nobody in Galway doing that at the moment. Right. There are, like, sushi bars and stuff like that, but, yeah. So, I love her.
Oh, I'm just thinking of turnip sushi. I just love it because it's like, please like me. Please. Just trust me. Please like me. I've made some turnip sushi because I know you like turnip. Please. Yeah. And it's worked, and it's working so well for us. It's a really great story, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you thought about expanding the tours across Ireland, or are they here and here only?
So, yes, I'm not going to lie. We're actually... I can say this, I'm sure. We're actually working with Skillnet. You know Skillnet?
Yes.
So we're actually going to be offering a training course to set up your own food tourism company.
Wow.
So that's going to be launching in May. So it'll be a 5-week course, so one day a week, and with the idea that hopefully then afterwards, you know, be able to franchise the right people and start the food tours nationally. That's the idea, but we'll see how it goes, you know. But there is plans, yeah. And we already do tours outside of Galway. We do Connemara and the Ayrlines, and we do County Clare as well. But, you know, I did want to always do tours for people, you know, outside of the country, and outside of Galway, but yet again, it comes back to the guides, the people that are going to be running us, you know, you have to find the right people with the same kind of ethos as you. So, yeah, I think this might be a window in.
Talk to us about the Aran Islands.
I was going to ask that as well.
Because we have this obsession.
Yeah.
It's kind of an appreciating from afar type of lust, even though we haven't real experiences.
Well, you have been. You went on a Gaeltacht tour many, many moons ago. Okay, not that many
Only
moons ago.
Years ago.
Okay, he's not that old. as a sprightly teenager in the late 2000s, yeah.
So long ago, yes.
Yeah, and I'm obsessed with islands, as in, like, I'm like, oh, let's go to the Isle of Man, Iceland, let's go to the Channel Islands, yeah. And you're like...
A theme going here. Even though you're from an island, but
but it's a big island. I want to be able to look one way and see the sea, and look the other way and see the sea again. Yeah. And well, you live near the island, so we want to know everything about them. Aran Islands, tell us and everything.
Yes. And I think Aran Islands and food.
Yeah. So, like, what we offer is that, you know, you get to fly over on those planes. I can't remember what the model of the planes, but they're 9-seater. They weigh you before you actually get on the plane, right? You know, so they can put you in different places. You know?
That's all screwed.
It's like so if you're having a bad day, don't go. But yeah, so basically we kind of combined a tour where we were doing an abalone farm on the mainland in Rossville. Yeah. So you know them maybe? Yeah. So they're unreal, and Cindy's class. So do seaweed tasting, and she makes all these like different abalones, and you know the sea cucumbers?
Yeah.
And also the, sorry, my English is gone. Ursin? Yes, thank you. You can cut that if you want.
And you can just go, and they also do urchins.
So getting to taste all those different types, and then we set sail over to Aran Islands, fly over there, and then we go to Inishmore, where we go to Gabriel and his goat's cheese farm. Mm. His mother-in-law has Chiman Fadi, so go for there for lunch, you know, with the goat's cheese, you know, based main course. You know, she makes some amazing stuff with a glass of wine or, you know, bubbles or whatever you feel like. And then head over to Garode, who is Michael, who you met Michael last time you were in the market there. So his brother is from, they're both from the Aran Islands, but his brother is there and he has his business. He makes these beautiful pastries, you know, old school Irish, you know, shortbreads and crumbles and stuff like that. And so we have something there like that, and then a coffee and or tea, and fly back over to the mainland. And and then afterwards finish up in Miklpuchin, where you'd go and meet, isn't he class? I love him.
We're dying to get out there sometime because we love that gin in particular.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, the Puccin's fab, but you know it's in German.
Yeah.
And is the tour in Irish? Is it Irish English or only English?
Only English. Well, I don't speak Irish, unfortunately. I moved to France, that's my excuse. Okay?
Absolutely, and stick to it.
Yeah. Oh, so you were one of those kids who got the time off school. Okay, now. It's like, okay, now go. I actually love the fact that, you know, your French story there as well, because you were saying, like, you couldn't think of the word in English, which I love, because I think that's so beautiful.
That's in English, speaking in English all of the time. It's like, oh my God, I can't engage my brain in that English word.
You mock me because I just make a noise if I can't think of the word. And I just go, oh, you know the and you're like, oh, I'm supposed to read your mind.
Yeah. After all of these years, I am now a psychic. Because
even on the way here, I think I said it to you. I was like, oh, you're taking the R426. And it was the R248 or something. Yeah, and you went... Go this way then, I guess.
I was like, see how I understood that, even though you...
That's beautiful. I think that's great, you know, when you can read somebody's mind, you know, that way.
Growing up in France, whereabouts?
The Loire Valley.
Oh.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Best. Yeah, horrific. Absolutely shocking.
How did you get into food? Like, come on.
I remember my first food experience was, like, we had this... when we moved there, we no French, and my dad left, and I left my mum, not left, he went to work, he worked in Africa, and so left my mum with the three kids and no language. So there was the next door neighbours, right? She said, you know, come for an aperitif. So it's okay. So we went, and I remember they brought out these quail eggs, you know, and they're passing them around. And I thought they were, you know, living in Ireland. You know those eggs that you used to get at Easter, you know, with the speckles on top?
Yeah, smitty eggs.
I thought they were them. And I was just like, oh my God, amazing. So I took loads of them, and then I tried one.
Oh,
I did like it, but I remember that was my first food experience. You know?
Chocolate, okay.
You know,
slightly different.
Yeah. Slightly different, absolutely. Then, you know, that was my, I fell into food then really because I just love the whole culture around food. I love the way that people talk about food, that they actually, everything that they eat is actually discussed, you know. Oh, did you get that little hint of je ne sais quoi there? Or did you, you know, it's... No, I didn't get that, but it's a, you know, it's something that's shared over a few hours at over lunch or dinner, which is something that I wasn't necessarily used to in Ireland, you know. Then I went to study culinary arts and spent a few years as a chef, and then front of house was more my forte because I did like wearing nice gear and like having my nails done and, you know, stuff like that. And not getting burnt, and then I moved to Dublin, and it was like the Celtic Tiger days, so there was a lot of things happening, and I got to work with Patrick Gibo's new project at the time, which was Venue Brasserie with his son Charles, and that was really interesting because they just set me up as restaurant manager. I had no, like, you know, I'd been a waitress before, but not never a restaurant manager, so that kind of, yeah. I remember I had a little patch of hair that was missing from my head for a while. I just had so much stress, but a great time. Yeah. But like, you know, you're just thrown in the deep end. And I think, you know, how to deal with people is also something that's, you know, you just learn by experience, you know, and how to manage a team and stuff like that, you know. But the first, it was interesting, yeah.
And then into chocolate.
Then into chocolate, yeah. So Marc Amand from Larousse Foods, well, old Larousse Foods, he really liked that whole kind of, I think, a pure, like, slick kind of chocolate shops that you get in Paris, like in Marcolini and stuff like that. And there was nothing kind of happening in that field in Ireland, in Dublin. There was Leonidas, which was Belgian chocolate, which is different yet again. So it was really, really interesting process because I got to see a whole different side of it, I suppose, from, you know, packaging, retail, branding, you know, your chocolate range, you know, all these things that, you know, would be very different to a restaurant startup, I suppose. And then that's where Evelyn walked into my life and with the food tours, Fabulous Food Trust, yeah. And that's where the idea came.
Change your life.
Change my life. Thank you, Evelyn.
So Galway is your home, and you have the biggest love for it, which we love, and we can completely
infectious.
Yeah. Sometimes you can see, oh, that's nice that you love that place so much, but here it's completely understandable, and it's such a draw. Sorry to break it to you, but you have to move out tomorrow. You're done. Galway's finished.
Galway's done.
Yeah, okay. You're finished. So, but you have a day. You've one day to do what you like.
Yeah.
What will you do?
Oh my God, never to come back, that's it.
Yeah, only 24 hours.
In fact, the place has been obliterated. They're getting the bulldozers, it's on the motorway, ready to go, so it's done.
I'm actually going to start crying, those bubbles are going to my head.
Sorry.
Now.
Is this the first incidence of someone crying on the podcast?
No.
Interesting. Okay, so I suppose I love this, like, you know, going to Salt Hill in the morning, seeing the sunrise, over Salt Hill. I just think it's very, very peaceful. There's nobody around. I love that, so I'd do that. Then, if it was a Saturday, definitely head into the market, have the crack with Michael and eat some oysters and go to the Bean Tree, have some curry, and just, like, loiter around there. You're always going to meet somebody, and, you know, it's like, you know what's the story. And then I go over to Stefan from Ganesh, and just see what his catch of the week is and buy some fish and stuff. But I wouldn't want to cook that night because I've only got 24 hours, so I just buy for the crack and give it to somebody. And then I would a little aperitif in Sheridan's. A little glass of je ne sais quoi. I love going there because you never know what wine you're going to get. You know, it's a really interesting selection that Enrico has. A few a few little cheeses. I think I would have, my specials are like Young Buck, Clean, the Clean with the fenugreek, I think. And, oh, there's so many. Yeah, and then my new favorite is the Kyle Moore Abbey cheese that she's made East Galway. And it's kind of like an apple zeller cheese. It's class, really, really nice. Anyway, okay, so then afterwards I would...
Like, I wouldn't worry about being, like, full or anything. Like, just keep going. Yeah, like, that's the way I kind of would think about it. Because I always would, because I always think people, when I ask this, they go, well, I need to walk it off. Don't bother. Just keep going. Endless stomach. It's fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely have a donut with Danny. Definitely have a donut. If it was my last time, I'd steal some of his clothes as well because I love his clothes. He makes everything from scratch, and he makes these hats and everything, and these beautiful like tweed coats and stuff like that. So then I'd go and I'd probably go to Ardbia. What would I have? They are always changing their menu. Have something there. I don't know what I'd have. I'm very stressed now. I'm sorry. You can't see it on. You can't see it over the microphone. But I'm super stressed because I don't know what to be doing. And then afterwards, I definitely have a good steak in Kai for dinner. A few dirty pints in the Crane. Then maybe like let's say like the tasting rooms with Claire, like what she like have a little digestif there, you know, with some of her elixirs and botanicals that she has going. Maybe just for the crack, I'd actually go sparching and just like take a bottle of book fast and go to the Spanish Arch and you know have. I don't know.
Perfect.
I'm sorry to disappoint. I don't know.
I'm captivated.
I love that. And the great news is that was a lie. It's not being destroyed tomorrow, like, so you're fine. You have the rest of your life to enjoy it, so you're fine.
Sparching now. Let's go.
Yeah, okay. It's not this. Bye-bye. This is the second ending of the podcast halfway through.
After all of the power bubbles.
Are there any challenges ahead for you, for Galway? Is there any issues on the horizon?
Well, in terms, I suppose, competition, in terms of there's a lot more people doing food tours now, you know, and which is great to see. But I don't think Galway could sustain maybe four different food tours, you know, so that would be maybe a little concern. Also, Galway is getting so busy. I mean, is it getting too busy? You know, there's like so many... You know, between the cruise ships that land in and between the bus trips that are not necessarily spending time in Galway, they're walking through, you know, and they're not necessarily supporting local economy, but they're just it just makes it very difficult to actually manage through the streets and stuff like that. That's also, one concern. And, you know, you don't want to, I mean... You've seen in so many cities across Europe where, you know, when a destination gets way too busy and it just loses its soul, you know, and you don't want that happening with Galway. Can I say the VAT is killing me? VAT is killing me. So that's something, you know, that's quite difficult because you still, like, I want to give good value for money. I don't want to, you know, I remember going on a food tour once and I paid €120 for it. And then I remember they cut a croissant in half and put it on a plate and gave it to me. It's like, for €120, you can give me the full croissant, you know. So I don't want that. I want to actually give good value for money. And, you know, with the VAT and stuff, it's, you know, prices are going, like, so all the suppliers are putting up their prices. I'm putting up my prices. So, you know, that's a little concern as well. But, you know. There's mainly positives, you know. It's great. Like, it's great to be doing your own thing and something that you love. You know, I can't complain. I'm the luckiest girl in Galway. Maybe.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Yeah, back to the bubbles. If you ever find yourself in and around Galway, we implore you to book on one of Sheena's tours and you will have a magical couple of hours walking around this absolutely beautiful city that is a true culinary hotspot. For full details on Sheena's tours, go to galwayfoodtours.com for all details and to book on, or you can find her across various social media channels.